October the 21st, 1966. It started as just another day in the South Wales valleys. Miners working on the coal tip, children heading to school. But at 9:15 that morning, everything changed. After days of heavy rain, a coal tip gave way at the top of Mynyth Merthyr, sending a landslide of debris and waste downhill towards the village of Abervan at high speed. In its way stood a farm, a row of terraced houses, and Pantsglass Junior School. 144 people were killed, 116 were children. 50 years on, we remember the Abervan disaster, as Pantsglass pupils speak now about their dark secret of surviving.
My name's Gerald Kerwin. I've lived in Abervan all my life. When we were young children, we probably went through a kind of experience that we wouldn't wish on anybody.
I'm Jeanette Bickley. I'd recently come out of hospital. I had double pneumonia. And I argued and said, no, I was fine. I wanted to go to school. It was the last day of term. So my mother allowed me to go to school.
My name's Jeff Edwards, and I'm a survivor of the Abervan disaster. I walked to school normally that morning with my friend, and we got into the class, and I exchanged my library book, which was on the opposite side of the classroom where I sat. I returned to my seat, and the teacher started the lesson of the morning.
My best friend, Gary Minnie, hadn't come to school. So, like, my second best friend, Paul Jones, asked our teacher, could he come and sit by me? So he got up, moved across the classroom, sat down next to me.
I could see steam on smoke, and I said to the teacher, sir, there's smoke outside. And he said, oh, it's steam from the canteen. And I remember thinking, we haven't got a canteen in this school. Maybe I had to go to the senior school to have our dinners.
Shortly afterwards, we heard this hell of a noise, like a jet aeroplane. That's always been in my mind, is like a jet aeroplane.
The teacher reassuring the class it was only thunder. We just kept on with the lesson. And then the next thing I remember was waking up with all this material on top of me.
I like woke up and I was like buried up to my chest in debris and slurry and couldn't move. Paul was next to me. His head was on my shoulder.
I woke up and I was in the rafters with a table over my head, which was fortunate because it stopped the rubble crushing me, I suppose. My mouth full of muck and eyes full of muck.
I was just buried in this material and I was unable to get out because my desk was against my stomach. I had all this material above me and there was another child on my shoulder, so I couldn't, and I wasn't able to get away from that.
I could hear screaming all around me and I could see children, and I had a young boy laying across my lap and another child was rushing around trying to dig us out, Melvin Walker, and he pulled the table off my head and he was digging me out, and there were other kids screaming for help. So we tried to find a way out of the school. So because we were in the ceiling, we got out through an hole in the roof.
There were screams and shouts, and obviously as time went on, the screams and shouts got less and less. I was lucky because I was in a bubble of air, which enabled me to breathe.
My friend Gerald pulled on my ankle because he was buried, and I tried to get him out.
Jeanette asked if he was okay, and like we said, oh, we I'm trapped, I can't get out, kind of thing, I'm stuck. And she said, don't worry, I'll go and get help. I'll tell him where you are.
I had very blonde hair, almost white, and when the rescuers came in to the classroom, somebody recognised that there was white hair below him, and said, oh, there's a child here. The time I got out, just after 11 o'clock, there were no ambulances left, and I ended up going to the hospital in a grocer's van.
There were men dragging children out, and I said, I need to go back. I'll show you where they are. And they said I couldn't go back in. I said, I need to go back to my friends. So they said, show us which way you come out. So I pointed to the direction. I told them which way I come out, and then they carried me and put me in a house across the road.
The next thing I can remember then is somebody shouting, and we answered back, or I answered back, and they said, oh, we can't get into the classroom, but if you by the windows, cover your heads, because we're going to have to break the windows to come into to care you, like.
Because it was quite new in the school year, I had new shoes and new cardi, and I'd left them in the school. So I got quite upset, and I said, I need to go back, because I had new shoes and new cardi, and I'd have a row off my mother. And they said, no, you can't go. I said, well, I need to. And they said, no. And then they carried Gerald in to the house. So Gerald had got out then. And while they went back to get more children, I ran out the door. And I ran up the road because I thought, my mother will never find me. And what will happen if my mother will never find me?
My mother came up to the hospital then, and she'd been down to school with my father. They didn't know where I was.
My mother was fortunate, because the first she knew of it was by seeing me. The other mothers wasn't so lucky, because I was the only one in the street that survived. It was the last day of term. It was a long holiday for us after that, because we never did go back to school for such a long time after.
I feared that the tip was coming down again, and many of the children didn't want to go to school because they feared the same thing happening again.
They put us over into Mirthvale School for a short while. The coal trains were going past and rumbling, and I think we all got a little bit freaked out with the noise all the time, thinking it was going to happen again.
Where we used to go playing before with all the children, one, there was few children to play with, and really play was frowned on because of the people who had lost children. It's dealing with those demons of guilt of why you survived and others didn't.
All friends together, all been through it together, but even then none of us talked. We never mentioned it again. We'd all been through it, why mention it? And our parents had told us not to talk about it because we were lucky we survived.
It's just that kind of taboo how we were brought up, you know. It's something that's your little dark secret kind of thing. You don't discuss it with anybody else. Like.
There was a little bit traumatic in the street with me being the only child in the street that went to school that day and come home alive. So my neighbours were all a little bit sensitive about it. My first cousin died, and that side of the family they didn't want to know me. Still don't, actually, after 50 years. Quite a long time later, my friend Gaina, she wrote a book, and we all got together for the publishing of her book, and we sat and we talked for the first time. It was about 35 years after. It was very emotional, and we had a chance to say things to each other that we never had a chance to say.
We went to school as children, but we had to grow up very quickly following that disaster, and we were different people after, and will be until the rest of our lives.
Even looking back now, I watched footage recently on television, and I'm thinking, how did I get out? I'm the lucky one, or one of the lucky ones. Over the years, I didn't feel I was lucky. It felt there was a lot of guilt involved. But, you know, I got my children, my grandchildren, so I'm very lucky.
It's something that will be there forever.
Brother, I will carry you. for as long as it takes, for as far as it takes. I will shoulder your story, because it is also mine. And we will sow poetry across these Welsh mountains and valleys together. We are the untamable forest, the hard slate, the mighty seas, the rolling skies. This is Heart.